We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In Thailand, months of street protests came to a violent end last week as the military cracked down on anti-government protesters. Now, this was the worst political violence in Thailand in decades. Some people say, in fact, there's really never been anything else like it in Thailand. Observers of Thai politics, though, do also say that this violence was the result of tensions that have been building for years, between urban and rural, between politics as usual and the possibility of democratic reform, and also between the supporters of the current and the past prime ministers. This morning in this hour of Focus, we'll try to talk about this recent political violence in Thailand and ask what it means for the country's future. And our guest is Clark Neer. He's professor emeritus of political science at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb. has a long affiliation with the university and its Center for Southeast Asian Studies, and has been a longtime observer of Thai politics. He's joining us this morning by phone. And as we talk, questions are welcome. People who are listening are welcome to call. We just ask people to be brief so we can move along as much as we can, but we'd be happy to take questions. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number to use. We have a toll-free line, so that is there for anybody that would be making a long-distance call. That's 800-222-9455. And we have email, so you'd be welcome to send your questions along that way. You can write us at will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, questions, comments from people who are listening are welcome. And Professor Neer, hello.
Good morning.
Thank you.
To be here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. You know,
in
all of the stories that I have read about what's happened in Thailand just recently, there seems to be a struggle, I think, even among some journalists who've spent time there to understand. And I was also very struck by a quote from someone who is a colleague of yours, in a sense, somebody who is an anthropologist, a man named Charles Keyes, who's at University of Washington, apparently has also been, like you, been following Thai politics for a long time. And he was quoted in the New York Times saying that the recent events there that had happened in Thailand had led him to question everything that he felt he had learned about the country in all of the time he had been studying it. Would you go as far as to say something like that for yourself?
Well, I think I would go that far because I have been studying Thailand for 40 years and am one of those who did not predict the chaos, the crisis that has occurred, did not see it coming, and probably would have argued that it would not go as far as it did. So I agree with Charles that we've had to rethink a lot of our assumptions about Thailand. It's impossible to deal definitively with the issue because rather than being a black and white issue with a good guys versus bad guys, it's much more gray, it's much more nuanced, it's really quite complex.
Hmm. Well, let's try and see if we can take this apart or at least look at it piece by piece. And maybe the obvious first question would be to talk about the protesters that were there in Bangkok for a couple of months before the military moved against them, the people that are called the Red Shirts, and for obvious reasons. Who are the Red Shirts, and what was it that they wanted?
The Red Shirts represent rural people who have, for some 700 years of Thai history, essentially been disenfranchised. They've been discriminated against and viewed as country bumpkins by the elites of Thailand who have ruled for virtually all of Thai history. And when I use the word elites, I'm referring to the aristocrats, the royalists, top-level politicians and bureaucrats, the military, the highly educated and wealthy corporate leaders. These are the people who have ruled Thailand, and the the red shirts represent those who were ruled rather than being rulers. For centuries, really over 700 years, those rural people in kind of Buddhist fashion were content with their lot in life and believed for karmic purposes or whatever that their lot in life, which was to be very poor, was what they had no choice about. And so they were accepting of it. They were accepting of their lot in life. Now, all of that changed just some 10 years ago when former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat changed all of that very dramatically and put forth policies that made a difference in the lives of the poor. And when he was ousted from office by the military in a military coup in 2006, then they realized, all of a sudden began to understand that they had been discriminated against and that they should have more of a role in government and that the government was not truly democratic.
Mm-hmm. As you say, the red shirts were supporters of this former prime minister, Mr. Thaksin, who was removed by military coup in 2006. He was actually convicted in absentia of corruption in 2008. He is in exile. How much of what we have seen has to do with power struggles among the elites and between people who might be his supporters and people who would be supporters of the current prime minister, Mr. Opsit?
That's an excellent question, because Thai politics has traditionally revolved around patron-client networks, various groupings, various networks within the society that were constantly vying for power. The network might be bureaucratic, it might be royalist, it might be military, or it would be factions within the military, factions within the bureaucracy. And they are constantly fighting to get more and more power and authority in the society. And so that is precisely what is going on. There's a struggle among these, these patron-client factions for power. And the rural peoples now have moved into Bangkok in their demonstrations, and they also are trying to become a part of various factions that that will provide them with more and more goodies.
Mm-hmm. So, well, the red shirts, among their demands was they were protesting the current government, which I'm sure that they felt represented these elites that had previously discriminated against them. And so one of the things that they were trying to do, apparently, was to force out the current prime minister and perhaps force new elections. Talk a little bit about the current prime minister, particularly how it is he came to office, because that seemed to be another one of the things that the red shirts and people who support them were complaining about.
Well, the prime minister today is named Opsit, and you'll notice that that's actually his first name, but in Thailand you use first names, not last names when you refer to people. For example, the present king of Thailand, his name is Bhumibol Adulyadet, but he is known as King Bhumibol. Mm-hmm. And the present prime minister then is Prime Minister Opsit. He is a highly westernized graduate of Oxford, young, handsome, and in many ways the quintessential elite of Thailand. He has royalist blood. He is considered an aristocrat. He speaks fluent English, highly educated. He is precisely the kind of prime minister that Thailand has had, other than military rulers, for much of their history.
And the complaint, I think, by his opponents was that he came to power, became prime minister, really through the influence of the military, through elite power brokers. He was not popularly elected. How did he become prime minister?
Oh, that you're absolutely correct, David, that is how he became prime minister, not through elections, but he became the prime minister when he was able to cobble together a coalition of minor parties, including his own party, which is the long-term, highly esteemed Democrat Party. And by cobbling together this coalition, he was able to take over the prime ministership. But this all occurred after the military had ousted former Prime Minister Thaksin and then taken out of office successors to Thaksin, who, for various, almost everybody agrees, not important reasons, were not allowed to stay in office. But Apisit, because he is now supported by the military, supported by the elites, has been able to stay in office.
Mm-hmm. Our guest, let me just very quickly reintroduce, our guest for this hour is Clark Near. He is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, someone who has been following Thai politics for a very long time, has a long association with the Center for Southeast Asian Studies there at NIU, and we're talking about recent politics and recent events in Thailand. Questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. You may also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. Mr. Thaksin, the previous prime minister, as I said, he was charged with, tried in absentia for corruption in 2008. He left the country to avoid this prosecution. He's been in exile now. He was sentenced to serve 2 years in jail, sentenced in absentia. And as one might expect, what he has said was, well, the charges against him were politically motivated. Was there, in fact, do you think that there is, in fact, anything to the corruption charges against him?
I do think there is a great deal of reality in the corruption charges. One of the great ironies of this entire crisis is that Prime Minister Thaksin is one of the very richest men in all of Thailand, maybe surpassed in wealth only by His Majesty the King. But he received his wealth through the communications business. He's a communications mogul. He was able to take over the military in terms of cell phones and communications equipment and the like, and then he parlayed that great wealth into becoming a prime minister. In a sense, he almost, you might say, bought his way into power. After he was in office, there is evidence that is not really questionable that he was an exceedingly corrupt person, and that he used his position of power, his public position, for personal gain. That's one of the ironies of this crisis, because it is the rural people and supposedly the poor people who are using the richest man in the country for their purposes.
Well, and that was going to be my next question. Do people there in the country think that there's anything odd about the fact that this man who, as you say, probably purchased his way into office, that maybe one of the richest, if not the second richest man in the country, is the hero of the poor and disenfranchised?
There are many rural people who raise their eyebrows at this situation. Absolutely. But Thaksin did a remarkably popular political policy, and that was to be populist, to come up with health reform programs that were in the best interests of the poor, to come up with aid to villages, to end the indebtedness of rural peoples. All of this, these kinds of populist policies were exceedingly popular among the rural people. The elites in Bangkok and in provincial capitals viewed the policies as reckless. reckless in the sense that they were fiscally irresponsible, costing huge amounts of money. But the health plan, for example, gave any kind of health care essentially free to the people. It was called the 30 baht program. Baht is the Thai currency, but 30 baht is just a little bit more than a dollar. So you could have heart bypass surgery for a dollar. You could get aspirin for a dollar. But you could have the most complex of treatments, and it would be a dollar. You can imagine how popular that was.
Just maybe one more question, and I've got a caller here. The Thai government, I believe, has charged Mr. Thaksin with terrorism, accusing that he orchestrated the red shirt protest from outside the country. And it is true that he continued to, at a distance, to talk to them, to talk about what was going on in Thai politics, and I'm sure that he was encouraging to them. Do you, though, think that he was in some more direct way involved in the protest?
I think he was involved in the protest very, very definitely. But it's difficult to talk about his role. What you hear over and over is that his personal fortune has been used to buy the protesters whatever it is they needed if they came to Bangkok and engaged in demonstrations. I have not seen any definitive evidence that his personal money went to individual protesters. But that is certainly a common belief among the people, and it very well may be true. I'm just saying that I have not seen evidence to that effect. But you're right, he has been now charged of engaging in terrorist activity. His pictures, his speeches, his words have been broadcast to the people over microphones, at protest sites. He is considered a symbol of the protest movement against the government in Thailand. He claims that he wants a peaceful change, that he is not a terrorist, but he is a man who is hurting a great deal because he is in exile. Much of his great wealth has been taken from him, although he still remains fantastically rich. So it's not an easy situation to analyze.
Let us take a caller here. We'll talk with someone in our area here, I presume, a caller on line number one. Hello.
Champaign County, of course.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to, well, I hear he tweets, actually, to the masses, so he's even using that. But I think the structural phenomena is what I'd like you to talk about it. You mentioned that the coup against Thaksin after the reforms, apparently authentic agrarian reforms, was about 10 years ago. I'm trying to put it in the frame of the Asian currency crisis and the IMF's role. I haven't taken the time to see what Walden Bellow at the International Forum on Globalization, who was on campus here some time ago, making a more structural analysis about particularly this part of the world. But I just think that the crisis is driven not just by local Thai events, too. It seems to me that I don't know whether the, what. Well, could you respond to that general sort of line of argument?
Yes, I could. I would like to do that. The military coup against Thaksin was actually in 2006, and the huge crisis, economic crisis, that Bellow and others have talked about was in 97, 98, 99, maybe 7 or 8 years before that. My own view is different from that of Walt Bellow. I believe that the crisis is overwhelmingly internal. That is, that if you listen to the demonstrators and read about them, there is very little discussion of foreign involvement, foreign imperialism, foreign economic domination of Thailand in any way. And I don't think that Thaksin's policies were either supported or undermined by foreign nations. And so I see it as primarily internal rather than from abroad.
Don't you see the possibility that, of course, there's that gap in time, but the IMF dictates were put in place, and to what extent that a billionaire phone executive who got it through crony capitalism, which was the way things worked, instituting some kind of relief for the countryside, at least was seen as I'm sure the local elites were not happy with them as well, but it seems to me that the broader financial circumstance that the whole of the world is in has to have some dimension in this. So I guess I'll hang up and listen further. Thank you.
Well, maybe let me then, as a kind of a follow-up, and let's go back again and talk a little bit about the coup, the 2006 coup that pushed aside Mr. Thaksin. Well, what did motivate that coup? Why did the military do that?
The military overthrew Thaksin to put their own person into power because of several reasons. First, it was viewed by many people that Thaksin was a Republican, not a Republican in the how we feel in the United States, but Republican in the sense of being anti-monarchical, and that he desired, had ambitions to be something like the president of Thailand, that to take over the role that had traditionally been his Majesty the King's. And that was anathema to a large number of Thais, but a significantly high majority of the Thai elites. So that was a very important reason why the military decided that Thaksin had gone too far. Second, he had engaged in what everybody agreed was corruption or the use of public office for private gain. That was the most important stated reason for the coup. But almost all of us understood that it was really an attempt to get out this nouveau riche Prime Minister Thaksin, so that the traditional politicians who would act in the best interests of the Bangkok elites would be able to come into power. And that's precisely what happened.
And just I think that there also may be a little risk of overgeneralizing in some of the reporting on this when it makes it sound as if this is really one of the big fault lines here, and I think it actually is one of the big fault lines in Thai society, is class, and that the red shirts, that those people are mostly farmers, they're urban people, they're also rural worker, poor rural, poor urban workers, but basically that it's the red shirts, the people who support them, the people that support Mr. Thaksin, are the poor and the disadvantaged, and on the other side, the people who support Mr. Abhisit, they're more urban, they're the people who are better educated, they're middle class, they're more wealthy. I think it is the case that Mr. Thaksin and the red shirts, they actually do have some support from the people who are on the upper end of the class spectrum. You know, maybe not a lot, but in fact that there are people on that end who do who are opponents of the current government.
Well, that your point is very well taken. I would say that many Thais think that the red shirts have a number of very good points to make, that they have been systematically discriminated against. There is also a great deal of something akin to racism or classism in Thailand. The rural peoples, mostly from the north and the northeast, are darker skinned. They are more leathery. They are people who speak a different dialect from those in Bangkok, and they are looked down upon. And so the red shirts do not have any of the sense that they are true Thais as the central Thais see them, and as the Bangkok Thais view them. So that adds a very unfortunate aspect to this crisis.
We are just about the midpoint, just a little bit past the midpoint. Our guest in this hour of Focus is Clark Near. He is Emeritus Professor of Political Science at Northern Illinois University, DeKalb. He had been there for a number of years as a student of Southeast Asian politics, Thailand in particular, had long affiliation with the Center for Southeast Asian Studies there at NIU. We're talking about current events in Thailand. And questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. You may also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The military has been an important force in Thai politics for a long time. The country has had 18 military coups in the last 75 years. And in this particular case, finally, the military moved on the protesters after they'd been there in Bangkok for a couple of months. At the same time, going back to this theme of many divisions in Thai society, there also seem to be some divisions in the military. At least people will remember that there was one general in particular who took the sides of the red shirts, was suspended for that, and then was shot by a sniper and died not long after that. Can you say some more about within the military, what kind of divisions exist and how they think about who should be running the country?
Well, you're right to say that the military has had a disproportionately important role to play in Thai politics for a number of decades, and that the military is somewhat factionalized. I don't know exact numbers, David, but I would say that over 90% of the military is supportive of the government today. And the reason is that the government provides the military with whatever it is they want. And it is not clear if the red shirts were to take power if they would be supportive of the military in the same way. Well, the military knows which side its bread is buttered, and therefore it is supportive of the government. The particular military general who you referred to, Se Dang, is the name he is known by in Thailand, which means something like Commander Red. He was a renegade. He was an exception. There are very few people, generals in particular, supportive of the red shirts in the way that Se Dang was. But his renegade status came from a view that not only was he a red shirt, he was a hardline red shirt. He wanted the demonstrations to continue. He said he was willing to put his life on the line. He was much stronger than the average red shirt was about these demonstrations.
Perhaps also we could talk a little bit about the role here of the monarchy. I think it was interesting that apparently there was a lot of speculation about how members of the royal family felt about all of this. For example, that apparently some people thought the king had red sympathies, but he didn't say anything directly about that, and there was a lot of parsing and puzzling and people trying to figure out, well, what do other members of the royal family think? What did the Queen think? What did other people think? And did they go one way or another? And then also, as apparently sort of a background to this, is perhaps the way that people in Thailand think about the monarchy, and in fact, whether they would even want it to continue.
Traditionally, some 90-some percent of the Thai people revere His Majesty the King Bhumibol Adulyadet. He is now 82 years old. He is the longest-serving king of the world at present, and Thailand's longest-serving monarch ever. He's been on the throne since 1946, and he has assiduously put forth the view that he is a man of the people, that he is concerned about the development of the peasantry, their economic development, their economic situation. And he is venerated as no other king of the world is. Indeed, he has been considered a god king. But he is now 82. He is in a hospital, and he is frail. There are rumors that that his mind is not as clear as it used to be. And that is one of the reasons that he did not make any statement. Now, you mentioned that there were some feelings that he might be a person who was pro the red shirts. Mm-hmm. I would say that overwhelmingly the view of most Thai and analysts is the opposite, that his rather conservative nature is more supportive of what we call the yellow shirts. Yellow is the king's color. It represents Monday, which is the day he was born. And as a yellow shirt supporter, he is in favor of the present government under Apisit rather than the Reds. That is, I would say, by far the more prevalent view of the people. It's impossible, David, to be definitive about what Her Majesty, the Queen, his wife, believes, or their children. The most important of the children, in this sense, is the Crown Prince. His name is Prince Vachira Longkorn, and he is the heir apparent when the king passes. The king, who, as I said, is universally beloved and revered, is very different from his son, Prince Vachira Longkorn, because the prince is not universally revered. Indeed, many Thai, and almost all the Thais with whom I have spoken over the years, view him as a person who does not have the moral stature or the values that the Thais want as king. So I think it's very difficult to speak very clearly about His Majesty or the Crown Prince on their preferences in this. It is true that the king made no statement about whether he supported the red shirts or the yellow shirts. That was a very serious decision on his part and can be interpreted in at least two different ways. The first is that he's simply too frail and too sick and could not say anything that would change the minds of the people, and that he was afraid if he did say something, for example, as he did in 1992, when there was another crisis in the country, and he brought the leaders of that crisis into his palace and stopped the demonstrations, showing his tremendous, tremendous moral power. He did not do that this time, and that could be interpreted in as I'm saying, in many different ways. I have read some reports that said that he purposefully did not say anything, not because he was frail or sick, but because he felt that the Thais must mature in their democracy, and that if he stepped in each time there was a difficult situation, the Thais would get used to that and would never learn the arts of compromise and freedom and all that are required by democracy.
If, given that, as you say, if the Crown Prince is not considered to be the man that his father is, does that, and I'm sure that this is difficult because in Thailand I think that it's one has to be very careful about what one says about the monarchy. I believe that, in fact, to criticize or disparage the king would be a crime. So I don't know how openly people could speak about such a thing. And I imagine they're probably, given the fact that most Thais feel strongly about the monarchy, that there is this minority that would say, well, maybe we don't need it or we shouldn't have it. How, at the point where if the Crown Prince becomes king, what is the way that people feel about him say, or what might that say, or how might that influence the way people thought about the monarchy in general, and whether it should continue, or what the role of the king should be?
That's an excellent question. It requires some guesswork because it has not yet happened, and so it is difficult. You were right. There are lay magistrate laws in Thailand which preclude anything that is disparaging of the king or his family. And so much of the discussions that take place about the royalty are done privately and not publicly. To speak publicly, as I just did, would be tantamount to committing a crime, but fortunately we're in the United States where it is not a crime, and therefore I am not concerned about that. But I would be much more careful if I were living in Thailand and speaking about the lack of leadership of the Crown Prince. So you're correct that that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Now, if the Crown Prince inherits the throne, most of the Thais with whom I have spoken have said they will simply accept it, and instead of giving their great allegiance and veneration to the king, they will go about their business without much concern about the king, and that the king will not play a major role for them. Now, I suppose it's possible that the Crown Prince could become, after a decade or two decades or three decades, he's in his 50s right now, that the Crown Prince could become a, quote, great king. After all, he will be surrounded by people whose job it is to make him look very good, just as the present king has been made to look very good. I said to you that the present king, King Bhumibol Adulyadej, was famous for going up country and serving his people. But it wasn't until Prime Minister Thaksin came in and had this dramatic populist policies that changed the lives of the people, of the peasantry, that many Thai rural people began to think, ooh, maybe the Thai king's role is minor compared to what it could be if he had systematically worked hard to truly improve their lives instead of the more minor ways that he has done over the decades.
Mm-hmm. About 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. Our guest is Clark Neer. He's professor emeritus in the Department of Political Science at Northern Illinois University, DeKalb, where he's part of the Center for Southeast Asian Studies, a longtime observer of Thailand and Thai politics, has been there at NIU for a number of years. And we're talking about recent events in Thailand. Questions are welcome, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you may also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller in Effingham, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, thanks, David. I have two questions. First, I hope I'm not being remiss. Could your guest articulate again the man who he described as responsible for the turmoil? How did he get that done?
Sir, I'm sorry. I'm not sure that I said that one man was responsible. Are you referring to the former Prime Minister Thaksin?
Well, I think that was the name. I was distracted for a minute and then lost some of it. That's why I'm asking again. But he's in exile now.
Yes.
And he declared him to be a terrorist. That's the subject. Not the terrorism,
yes.
But the man himself.
I would say that it would not be fair to say one person was responsible for all of this chaos and all of this mess, which has cost the Thais so dearly. In a sense, he has some responsibility because he put forth policies that changed the thinking of the rural people, the very people who became the red shirts and came to Bangkok and engaged in the demonstrations. So, I mean, you're correct in that sense. But many of the people who are in Bangkok are not even pro-Thaksin supporters because they realize that he is a very flawed individual, that his corruption, for example, his indiscriminate killing or policy of killing drug lords that were only alleged to be drug lords and may or may not have been, his hardline policies toward the Muslims in the southern provinces of the country, all of those policies were very poorly carried out under his administration. And many of the red shirts realized that, and therefore they are on their own and not simply followers of Thaksin. That would be a reason why I would be of the impression that he is solely responsible for the past several months' demonstrations.
So he peeled back somewhat then the blinder that the rural, as you describe, saw that they saw his corruption not only, but evidently other corruptions within the society they were living in. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Yes, all right. My other question is, do you have any understanding of the mass psychology of fascism?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
All right, and did that play into what we are discussing? If that's a broad spectrum. I understand that.
Yes, my hesitation is that I was not in Thailand to see the demonstrations, but I have read a significant amount about them. And any time that one is in a crowd, all of the people who are in that crowd gain some kind of strength. They gain enthusiasm for their cause because they are surrounded by like-minded people. And it's all very exciting, and I would think that kind of fascistic crowd would indeed have some and maybe even considerable impact on the demonstrators.
I hope the caller will forgive me. I need to jump in here. We're really getting short on time. We have about 5 minutes, and I do have one more caller I want to get to. And others, we can try to get in some more folks. We could do at least this one, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And again, our guest is Clark Neer. He's Emeritus Professor of Political Science at Northern Illinois University, DeKalb. On to the next caller. This is someone in Urbana and line 1. Hello.
Yes. I have spent about 8 years in Thailand, mostly associated with Khasethat University, which means agricultural. And I was wondering two things, really. What the Chinese of Bangkok, what influence they've had, and how, and then the Northeast and its, you're right, they are very different. They speak an almost different language, or certainly a different dialect. Whether there are enough rural people who are becoming educated to make a difference.
That's a very interesting question, and you beat me for years in Thailand. I have been there only 7 years, mostly up in the town of Chiang Mai, but as well as Bangkok. The Sino-Thai, that is the Chinese Thai, are exceedingly important in Thailand. Indeed, former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat is from a prominent Chiang Mai Chinese family. I'm not referring to Chinese who come from China recently. They may have been here even generations. But the Chinese Thai disproportionately have power economically and is, as the years go by, politically. This causes some consternation among the old Thai elites who are Thai, as opposed to Chinese Thai. That may be part of the reason for antagonism toward Thaksin Shinawat himself.
Anything further that you'd want to add to that?
I'm awfully sorry. I did not hear that.
That was me. I wanted to make sure that you were finished answering the questions of the caller before I went on to something else.
Yes.
Okay. Because and I hope that gets at the caller's question. We just have a couple of minutes, and one of the things that I wanted to ask about is what now. You know, the protesters, the redshirt protesters, one of the things that they were trying to do was to pressure for new elections, I guess, in the hope that there might be a change of government. And at one point, the current prime minister, Mr. Apisit, said, well, maybe we could have elections in the fall, but I don't know that anybody was on either side was really in all much of a mood to negotiate. And that went off the table pretty quick. I think
there's
some people who would say, well, even if there were elections to be elections and there was a change in government, that the terms of the conflict wouldn't really change. We'd just have, maybe instead of having red shirt protesters in the street, we'd have yellow shirt protesters in the street.
Well, remember that we did have yellow.
And there were.
Yes. In fact, the yellow shirts were the ones who closed down the airport a number of months ago. The future is absolutely unknown. I think almost everyone agrees that there will be elections probably at the end of this year, and that those elections will result in, once again, the support, if not for Thaksin himself, because he is in exile, but for whoever replaces Thaksin as leader of the group that represents the rural peasantry. And if that occurs, whoa, that is going to be of grave concern to the elites of Bangkok, who will view their traditional position as in great jeopardy. And if that occurs, there is then, of course, the possibility of something akin to civil war, which is very frightening in this country known as the Land of Smiles. Mm-hmm. A land of stability, where surrounded by Burma and Cambodia and Laos and countries that have had very difficult contemporary histories, and Thailand has been this kind of oasis of calm amidst this sea of chaos. Well, that's all changing, and that's very frightening.
I was really struck again by a quote to this. Again, this was in one of the stories I read in a New York Times story. It was a quote from a Thai senator, someone who was identified as a government supporter. And he was talking about the day that the troops finally moved against the red shirts. Mm-hmm. And he said, "It was the most tragic day in my memory in Thai history." He said, "Nobody gained anything. Nobody won. The country lost."
Mm-hmm. Well, there's much truth to that. Vividly, we were seeing Thais killing Thais. That in and of itself makes it one of the worst days in Thai history. And it didn't resolve any of the serious problems that are viewed by the peasantry or the elite Thais. And so the problems continue.
And we're really at the point where we have to stop. And I feel like so many times on these shows, I'm at the end and I'm asking someone to make a prediction that really can't be made. But having said that, do you have any thought about how this is going to play out?
Well, David, I have long been very optimistic about Thailand, having lived there for a very long period of time and knowing many Thai people. I have often commented on the Thai capacity to cope with very difficult challenges. And the Thais have come through moderately. It's the essence of their foreign policy, which has been successful throughout the years. And so I am quite optimistic things will happen. But we began this program with your quote from Charles Kies, which said that everything I've learned about Thailand, I now have to question.
Yeah.
And so that's the situation that I am also in. Everything that I have learned says that it will work out well. Is this situation that we've been seeing the last 2 months fundamentally different from anything we've had in the past? And if so, then we can't speak very definitively.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to leave it at that as
okay.
We're here at the end of the time. Perhaps we can talk again some point in the future, but for now we have to say thanks to our guest, Clark Neer. He is Emeritus Professor of Political Science at NIU in DeKalb. And Professor Neer, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.